Theater of the Mind.
Not long ago, I was chatting with someone about the movies and how the studios are just pumping out an unending supply of the same formulaic crap. Sequels, prequels, and worst of all, endless reboots are the standard now, and if I never see another superhero movie in my life, I will not be the least bit disappointed. I'm not ashamed to say I don't know what order the Avengers movies are in because I haven't seen any of them. The topic of superheroes led us to comic books and comic book movies, and about the different approaches Hollywood has taken over the years in portraying comics and film. There really have been several different ways of approaching these visual adaptations, and all of them are worth a look. One of my favorites is the 1982 Stephen King anthology, Creepshow. Everyone who saw it remembers the obvious blend of comic book and movie imagery seen in the credits and in the transition scenes between the five vignettes. But more subtly, you'll notice that the camera never actually moved in any of the takes. There was no panning, dolly shots, or zooms. This was a callback to the frame-by-frame layout of a comic, each viewing angle taking place in its own frame. Another excellent comic adaptation was 1990's Dick Tracy, starring Warren Beatty. This took the comic book approach further by orders of magnitude, and did an amazing job of blending the unreality of the comic book world with the real-world sets in action. Only 6 colors were used in the film's entire color scheme for all costumes, props, and sets, as this was the original color palette of the comic. The good guys all had normal faces, but all the baddies, and there were a lot of them, had very elaborate prosthetic makeups that painstakingly recreated the detailing of the original comic's grotesque villains. If you've never seen it, I recommend it highly. It truly is a visual work of art. The pinnacle of comic book recreation, in my eyes, was the collaboration between comic book legend Frank Miller and filmmaker Robert Rodriguez, 2005's Sin City. I'm not sure I can even come up with the words to describe it without devoting an entire show to it, but let's just say that the highly stylized, unreal world of the gritty and ultraviolent comic virtually overtakes reality, and the actors are just along for the ride. It really is, to me, the best adaptation there is, blurring the lines between the real and unreal, bringing the two-dimensional world of the graphic novel to life. Haunters usually love to make things as realistic and lifelike as possible. Many of our talented minions have produced some truly amazing props, set pieces, and costumes, and I'm truly humbled by the artistry that I see brought forth every year. But while the creation of truly realistic and believable art is immensely satisfying, let us not forget that Halloween is the realm of the fantastical, and, much like the age-old observers of Samhain paying respect to the crossing of the worlds of the living and the dead, we modern-day revelers are building our little worlds at the crossroads of the real and the unreal. Our haunts are, after all, theaters of the mind, and what awaits our audiences doesn't have to be believable to be terrifying, captivating, or any other flavor of entertaining that we choose to offer. A lot of the imagery that we take for granted in classic horror is a direct offspring of German Expressionism. The Expressionist movement was born in the wake of World War I, when the ravages of war and the crushing penalties inflicted upon Germany by the Treaty of Versailles left the economy in ruins and the people in a state of poverty and despair. People needed a lot of distraction to take their minds off their misery, and one way they got it was to go see a lot of movies. Filmmakers, however, didn't have much of a budget to work with because German money was losing its value at an alarming rate, and so filmmakers had to resort to an extreme degree of minimalism, creating sets not much more elaborate than what you'd expect at a modern grade school play. Since realism was pretty much off the table with the available budget, flats and backgrounds were painted in a very stylized way with lots of crazy angles and fake representations of light and shadow. The result was very moody, crazy, and unsettling, which fit right in with the movie's themes, which were usually about things like despair, isolation, and madness, which pretty much describe what life in early Weimar Germany was all about. Expressionism was not about presenting reality in a realistic way. It was more about mood and emotional impact. Some great examples of films from this era are Nosferatu, Phantom, and The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. This dark, simplified, stylized visual approach made a huge impact on filmmakers around the world, especially in the U.S. Films like the Universal Pictures monster movies and film noir were largely shaped by this, and its effects are still seen today. Tim Burton, for example, owes the lion's share of his success to the aesthetics of German Expressionism, as did Alfred Hitchcock years ago. The really cool thing about German Expressionism is that the unreal atmosphere of it creates a weird, surreal, dreamlike quality to the subject, and dreams can turn into nightmares, and nightmares are the bread and butter of the haunter. Dreams, nightmares, and hallucinations can make for awesome scenes in a haunt. Let's say your theme is an asylum. The usual approach would be to just make a set that looks like a cross between a hospital and a jail and have crazed lunatics running around in it. But what if you put the audience in the point of view of one of the insane patients? The walls and ceilings, if you can have a ceiling, could be at crazy angles, the lights flickering, and the medical staff could be disfigured evil monsters. The background soundtrack could be bizarre, dissonant ambient tracks, maybe laced with sinister whispers to suggest anxiety or disorientation. If the haunt goers are walking through a nightmare, everything, furniture, trees, whatever, would perhaps be out of proportion, misshapen, and threatening. The old German expressionist movies would be great inspiration for nightmare scenes. Nightmares and dreams can benefit a lot also by using fog to make everything hazy and indistinct. In a previous segment, I talked about using confusion and disorientation as tools. Such tricks would be ideal in a dreamscape scenario. One could argue that any haunt is unreal. After all, monsters, vampires, ghosts, and zombies are not objectively real. What I'm talking about is the presentation and setting. A haunted house is, ultimately, just a house with walls and floors and furniture. Caves exist, and so do castles. If something comes off looking like it does in real life, we say, that's real. Take, for example, the movie Silent Hill. When Rose is walking through the abandoned school building, that's a real setting. Such buildings can be found all over the world, and they look just like that. But when the sirens sound and the surroundings corrode away into the rust and blood nightmare hellscape of Silent Hill's underworld, that is an unreal setting. If you're a home haunter, chances are any set you build is going to look unreal because usually everything's going to be set up and separated with curtains and backdrops. The true challenge there is trying to make any scene look actually realistic. For the pro haunter or the homie who's lucky enough to be able to build the haunt inside, it's easier to set up realistic-looking rooms that would contrast with the scenes that are strange and disordered. For the pro haunter or the homie who's lucky enough to be able to build the haunt inside, it's easier to set up realistic-looking rooms that would contrast with scenes that are strange and distorted. Rigid, flat walls, whether they be plywood wall sections or even theatrical canvas flats, can go a long way towards setting up an ordinary room or hallway scene. So long as the walls are at right angles to each other, each room can be furnished and look like an otherwise ordinary room. Little details can be added, like wall outlets, switches, and vents, that won't be noticed but will nonetheless make the scene register as ordinary to the passing glance. That way, the monster, ghost, or mangled corpse or whatever you're employing for the scare will grab full attention and stand out. In a distorted, hallucinatory setting, the said bad guy would kind of blend in and become more a part of the scene instead of the absolute focal point. Either approach is perfectly viable, depending on what the effect is you're going for. It's easy to see how coming up with an unreal, fantastical theme can have its advantages to the haunter. Cost, for one. If you're having to use improvised backdrops, you don't have to worry about nice flat walls or expensive and hard-to-duplicate props, furniture, and set dressings. You can wing it and go with painted Tim Burton-like trees in the background, in rooms where the walls come together in whatever crazy angle is convenient to the build, and not worry that it makes the scene look unrealistic, because that's what you're shooting for anyway. Work time is another advantage. If you're not going for full realism, your art design for a costume, prop, or set piece can go minimalist and exaggerated instead of detailed and save you a lot of time on the build. And if your props and set pieces are going to be representational and not true recreations of true-to-life objects, chances are you have a better chance of making stuff that's easier to break down and store in a way that takes up less room. I know full well the angst associated with Halloween storage in the off-season. So you can have a haunt theme that's set in a realistic, true-life setting or a twisted, dreamlike setting. But what if you want both? Say there's a portal in the haunted house that leads into the spectral realm. Or the haunt tour is a dream that starts out normal and then morphs into a terrifying nightmare. Or a wizard casts a spell on the guests that bewitches their minds. There needs to be some kind of transition from the land of the real to the land of the unreal. If you're a pro haunter, or a homie with a good budget and plenty of room, a vortex tunnel is the ultimate passage from one world to another. At our haunt, we used one to act as a time machine to send people back in time to the sinister mental hospital before it burned down 50 years ago. If you can't swing a vortex tunnel, and let's face it, most of us can't, a dot room is a good transition between worlds as well. A normal scene can morph into a surreal one gradually by altering first the lighting, then the background ambient soundtrack, and then the color scheme. The real and unreal can invade each other as well. Imagine a scene done in total grayscale black and white, which is very weird and unrealistic, and then a normal character strolls in full color. They would stand out like a torch and command direct visual attention. When blending the real and unreal together in a haunt, so long as a sharp visual contrast exists between the two, they can mix together in a way that makes sense and doesn't become a jumble of imagery that takes time to mentally sort out. Remember, in a walkthrough, the audience is passing through the haunt and doesn't have the luxury of time to process what they're seeing. If your haunt is a display, on the other hand, you can be more subtle and nuanced. People will be hanging around and looking more closely, and they can benefit from the fun of discovery of details they would otherwise miss at a glance. Reality is pretty subjective in the horror and Halloween world. Perceiving something as real or unreal would depend on the context in which it's shown. A haunt could be set entirely in the world of the mundane or of the phantasmagorical, and good stories and scares could be told in each. And they can be mixed together for mind-bending scary fun, so long as they're shown in effective contrast so as not to become confusing. Be simple, be bold, and above all, keep it real. Or unreal. Or both, it's your haunt, take your pick. Just remember to keep a ghost light burning. From the Theater of the Mind, I'm Revenant, and you're listening to Hauntcast.
I'm going now. Heaven help you.
Please like and follow the podcast. Stalk us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Links in the description. And help us by sharing Hauntcast with all your haunt and Halloween brethren. Until next time, stay scary.